Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Arlene Cohen.
You're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, that twice-weekly podcast for people who stab ground cloth and make fine art.
Both things together this week. I like it. Very good.
Combo package. Okay, thanks for joining us, Arlene. This time, Christine not able to join, and it's my fault.
Oh, really?
Yes, because I have to travel, and couldn't record at night, so Arlene... kind enough to fill in recording during the day.
Yeah.
And so that worked out. So thanks for that. I have to make a 4-day trip to Germany. So I'll be a wreck when I get home. That'll be nice.
You know how much you love to travel.
I live for it. I live for it. It's my last one of the year. So
okay.
I'm living off of that adrenaline. It's the last one till the middle of January.
All right. Do you have a travel stitching project already packed or planned for at this point? Good.
Yep. Debbie Rowley, glitter and glamour opal.
Okay.
Glitz and glamour. Yep. Yep. All packed up, ready to go. You bet.
Awesome.
And I have the upgraded to some kind of better seat. I don't know what it is, but anyway, more room. And so all that.
1 inch, right? Because we know that 1 inch. Yep.
Yes. So we'll have room to stitch and plenty of hours too. Yeah, no doubt about that. Yuck. Yeah. These people that fly back and forth to Europe all the time, I admire them because it's a struggle for me. I can only doze off so many times, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Let's see. Oh, so get the plug in right up front. Arlene, works by ABC. WorksByABC.com, the ABC for Arlene's initials.
Yes, absolutely.
And have mentioned many times, be sure to read her blogs. One coming up, a blog post on color, I understand.
Yes, actually, it's a multi-part one that
Ooh.
I just, yes, multi-part.
Ooh.
So
look at you.
Yes, well, because I started writing and then realized that there was just, you know, I still haven't worked out sort of the quote perfect length or, you know, what's too long to write at one given point. So, you know, just trying to feel my way. And just realized that this was a stitching piece that, or I was writing about a piece of needlework, a project that I just learned so much by doing it. But really it's about color theory that I learned about stitch variations. And so as I started to write, I realized, you know what, this is more than enough for one day. I better break this up. So, and you know, there's a valuable lesson. I'm sure you've experienced this also when you're stitching a piece, and even if you're following a pattern or you're following instructions, and yet there's so much you're learning while you're doing it. You know, you're not just like mindlessly following instructions.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
So that was, you know, that's the message that I'm talking about in what this sort of current series of blog posts is about is a particular time that this happened. And it, you know, it's sort of hard. This was a project from some years ago now, so it's hard for me to really know what did I know about color theory before this project. Like, I'm pretty confident I knew the words complementary colors. I'm pretty sure I knew a color wheel, you know, from like, you know, art classes in,
right.
in school. Okay.
Right.
But did I know about analogous colors? Did I know about like triadic colors? Did I know some of those other things that came up, as I was working through this project? I don't think so. I'm confident that because I bought a color wheel at a Michaels or, you know, one of those stores, the color wheels that you could get. And it's not just here's a color wheel. It's like it's got all these other things on it. And if you look at and you read all those words, there's a lot to learn from it. And all of that played out. And I think most of the time in those stores, you find color wheels like in the painting, the artist section.
Right.
But all of that applies to thread, you know, color and hue and light and tone and all of that. And I love when I can make all those kinds of connections. And so I really know that because I was doing this project, with threads and making a lot of choices. It wasn't a pattern that, you know, here are the threads you will be using. It was, you need to choose your main color. Now you need to figure out what your complementary colors are. Here, you know, and even when you go to something like the analogous colors, which are colors near them on, you know, near your main color on the color wheel, well, you have a choice. You could go in the direction to the right or the direction to the left. And, you know, that could change the whole look of, you know, what you're choosing to do. And there's just, you know, I know that some of the pieces that I do in the work that I do now is because I did that big needlework project. It's a counted canvas work piece that I did some years ago. And, you know, there's some needlework that you do in your life that kind of sticks with you. And that's certainly one of them. So, yep.
So that was like a milestone marker for
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. That project is definitely a milestone marker in my needlework career in terms of, you know, sort of before, a little bit of before and after, things I did before that project and things I did afterwards. So yes, definitely. So you could go to my blog and read the story of it, or this, you know, depending on when you're listening to this, what parts I already have written out, and then continuing along. So yeah, absolutely.
Great. Yep. Well, I've enjoyed your blog so far. Don't quit. I know blogs are no longer cool, but don't quit.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Always enjoyable to listen to. Yep. At Etsy to get Arlene's designs, works by ABC the Etsy thing there. Yep. So that's, you know, that's interesting. The things you learn as you go along. Because, you do. You learn things. And I often think I should write them down because I forget. You know what I mean? And then it's like you'll learn it again. And you go, wait a minute, I already knew this. Because what I was doing, I'm working on the Sarah Brazier sampler.
Yep.
And we're just making X's, you know, we're just making X's, following a chart, making X's. And I'm always conscious of what's going on in the back side and how far I carry threads and stuff. And last night, even just making X's, I was sitting there and I thought, wait a minute, I need, you know, cause I always map out where I'm going to go with a color in a little motif. Where am I going to go with it? Am I going to just stitch two and end it off? Or am I going to try to carry it all the way through the motif so that that color is done? And usually that's what I try to do. If it doesn't force me to carry threads great distances. And so I'll sit there, watching me stitch is probably about as boring as it can be, but you know, I'll sit there and I'll map it out and just in my head, I'll just say, all right, this is the path I'm going to follow. And I always make full crosses, but then sometimes it pays to make half crosses and then come back.
Yep.
And so then I'll do that. And so last night it was one of those, and I didn't write it down, and I made some discovery. Wait a minute. I would be more efficient going this route than this route. And I would get cleaner X's because I always try to not have, like when I finish an X, to make sure that hole for that X is going to be open, if you know what I mean, rather than to carry it and basically cover that hole with the thread that's going to the next X. And sometimes I can do that and sometimes I can't, but I'm always conscious of that. So it was just one of those moments. Oh, if I do it this way, I'll get a cleaner look out of it. And then I'm always watching, especially on linen, how those X's look. Are they collapsing? Should I go the other way so it doesn't collapse the threads much? You know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, there's all those little things, and we really should all write them down and diagram them because there's much to be learned.
Are there a lot of motifs on Sarah Brazier that repeat that you're saying this because, oh, I just did that flower and I have 20 more flowers to go that are just like that and I want to do it the same way? Or are you just saying this more general thing?
No, there are motifs. I'm just at the beginning quarter of it.
Okay.
And there are repeat motifs, and that's, you know, and there's where I should have written it down. Because then I could repeat that and be more efficient and go faster. And I really should mark up the paths that I stitch. Because then I would just, when I get to the next motif, I wouldn't have to sit there for 3 or 4 minutes and figure out, all right, this is the direction I'm going to go. And then I go. So, yeah, I should think about those things.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Well, I think about them, but I don't write them down.
Well, the fact that you're talking about it right now might influence you to write it down the next time.
It might.
Well, sometimes that happens to me. I'm thinking about something and I'm getting annoyed that I'm not doing it. And the next time that I voice it out loud, or I have the opportunity to voice it out loud, that's what makes it happen. So,
yes. Okay. Well, that could happen this time. You never know.
But it's report.
It has been interesting because I never remember these names, but somebody had suggested as an efficient way of stitching, if you're doing the same color a lot, to load up a bunch of needles and take a piece of felt and just insert them in the felt.
Yep.
So you might have 8 or 9 needles all lined up, all with the same color.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are a couple of colors that are used regularly, particularly in the border portions and in some of the leaves and bay and vines. And so I've done that. And so I have this piece of felt and these two colors, I have several needles loaded up at all times. So then I'll take a Varissois silk. So it's what, six or seven strands. I forget. I think it's six. So I'll just tear one of those apart and load up the needles. And so I keep that piece of felt off to the side. And then I have my Paco, that triangular plastic thing that has paper inserts and foam backing so you can have threads for different colors loaded up.
Okay.
I think it's P-A-K-O. Anyway, it's been around forever. So I took and put all the symbols on the little card, the little cardboard strip that slips into that thing. And then every time that I'm going to use a color, then I will load 2 or 3 needles in that color and put them in the foam box for that symbol. So I have all kinds of needles all threaded up, which it seems like a mess, I know.
So not the way I would work, but okay, keep going.
But it really has helped because what I do then is if a color comes up, I'll go over there and it's threaded up. And I just grab it and start stitching. So I don't have to go to my key ring
of threads
and pull one off. And if I don't have one threaded up, then I won't just load one needle. I'll load 2 or 3.
Mm-hmm.
And that way I'm always, and then if I only use in a motif, if I only use say half of that thread, then that goes back and gets used for the next time.
Yep. Okay.
But sometimes I throw it away. Like last night I had 3 of them all that were the same length and they were all about 4 inches long. And I thought they looked a little frayed. So I threw them all away. But, so I've been doing that and I think it's really added, you know, small bits of speed to the thing. But it's kept me stitching. I think that's probably the thing is it's kept me stitching more than the mechanics of loading needles and, you know, and pulling out threads and that kind of thing. Mm. And, so like, you know, like if I'm watching football, while a play is going on, then, you know, then I'm stripping threads out of the bundle to load up. And, I think it's the stitching part has been a bigger block of stitching this way without so many, interruptions to, get thread and needle. So I don't know.
So how many needles would you say you've got out and threaded, like with thread right now? Like that's the thing that is a little, I'm not going to say overwhelming, that's too strong of a word, but that's a piece that I'm just not. And granted, it has been quite a while that since I have been working on a project that has had like multiple colors, and I certainly understand how this potentially could save time and keep you go. I totally get it. And I'm just trying to think if I were working on a project with multiple colors and little bits here of this color and that color, might I try this system? Maybe. I don't know. But I'm curious, how many needles do you have like sitting in your whole system right now?
for this project, oh, there's probably 15 of them loaded with thread right now. Right. Not a lot.
All right. No, that's not as bad as given what you were saying.
Oh,
was
no.
Like 30 or something like that. So.
Well, there are I'm easily that many colors in this thing. I'm pretty sure. I'd have to look.
Yeah.
But I haven't gotten to those other colors. Eventually I will have, I'm sure, 20 plus needles loaded.
Okay.
Yeah. But just, you know, I just do them as they come up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It seems to me, I just feel like I'm stitching more and doing the mechanics of loading needles and pulling thread less. So, because, you know, once you get a thread off of the bundle to pull, to strip two or three out versus one, doesn't take really any more time.
Sure.
And then get the needle threader out, load them up, poke them in the foam, and off we go. And so, I don't know. Maybe I'm just nuts, but so far this seems to be working. So,
and that's all that matters is that if it's working for you, then, and hey, maybe there's someone out there that it's a system that is going to work for them. So yep, absolutely.
And I'm sure that if you watched me, if you really were ultra bored and watched me, I'm sure unconsciously that I am coordinating this with football plays. In some way, I'm pretty sure of that. Because the Sunday afternoon NFL football games for 6+ hours, and then Sunday night, I can move things along. So, yep, yeah. Because we had Allison Cole on last week, Sunday, and we're talking about her tips and hints book, and I asked her what. For those who haven't listened, you got to listen. Allison is tremendous. Be sure and hear that. But I said, what are some of the tips out of your tips and hints book that people might use? And one she said was to always start every project with a new needle. And, that makes sense to me to do that. And so I was curious about you because my reaction to that was, well, I generally have a bunch of needles out. Because I'll have, like, if it's a needlepoint project with different threads, then I'll have two or three thicknesses of needles, two or three needle sizes, depending on the thread, which may or may not be right. I don't know, but it's what works for me. Because I have different holes for different thicknesses. And then, like, for this Sarah Brazier, this I'm 40 count linen, so I just have a truckload of 26 size 26 needles that I'm using for it. Mm-hmm. So. And I don't have, people talk about going through needles, rusting them out and corroding them. And I apparently don't have that acidic skin.
Yeah. Neither do I.
Yeah. So I don't wear out needles.
So I don't either. I mean, I read about and I hear about people talking about going through needles like that. I do tend to, when I'm starting a new project, to take a new needle. Just in the spirit of sort of new project, new needle, unless it's something small or quick, and I tend to not have too many small and quick projects. And I also
agreed with that. Yes.
And I tend to be a one project at a time kind of person. And so I am, I'm using the one needle that, I haven't had a project in a while where I've had multiple colors and to even sort of even contemplate or think about what you're talking about that you're using right now. But I'm thinking the big project that I've been working on is my gossamer lace project in blackwork. It's just all white thread, one strand. And to me, there is like no reason to line up a bunch of needles. I'm just going to finish with this one and move on to the next one. And when I'm done with this strand, I'm just going to rest my needle on the needle minder. Although most of the time I forget that it's sitting there and I just, poke it in the fabric and then I take out the next strand of thread from, the six, you cut a length and there's six in there and I just pull out one strand and I go. And, it doesn't really occur to me that, okay, you could lay out six of them at once and then just be ready to pick up. Cause I don't see it as there's no time saving or purpose for that. And for me, I don't have a huge stash of needles. I just have one needle going for one project, and I will use that one needle until I see it look bent or look, you know, off in some way. And then I can fully acknowledge needles are cheap. Needles are not, I could easily say that needle has outlived its usefulness. It is time to get a new needle. And it is always like a shock when I pull out a new needle and compare it to the old needle. Wow, I've really used that needle.
Yep.
It does make somebody once asked me about, you know, brand of needles you use. And I just, again, because I don't have what I know is genuine, some people's issues with the acidic hands and all that. I mean, I'll use whatever I have handy. And whenever I need to get more, it's whatever I can buy, whether they're the DMC brand. I think it's the DMC brand that you buy at Michael's, or whether they are John James, or whether they are, you know, whatever they are, I get them. That said, I was at my LNS this past weekend, and some friends knew that I was there. And one of them texted me and said, "Are you still at the LNS?" I'm like, "Yeah." And she said, "Do they still sell," this is at, she does not live in my area, "do they still sell Pat's Golden Needles at your LNS?" And I went and looked, and I said, "Yes." She's like, "Oh my gosh, could you pick me up some and send them to me?" And I was like, "Sure." Because for her, it made such a difference what kind of needles, and she couldn't get the specific needles that she liked, which of course now made me wonder, you know, there's a side of me that wants to do a little experiment. You know, take a scrap of cloth and, you know, get five different brand needles and, you know, just do a little scrap of, I don't know, cross stitching or something, and see what difference is it between needles. And I'm sure different people would find it would have different interpretations of that. I don't find a difference between needles, but, you know, as long as it serves its purpose, which is to get the thread through the cloth, and as obviously that it doesn't, like, discolor the thread or the cloth in the process, it works, you know? That's – but, yes, I do start – I tend to start new projects with a new needle, just in the spirit of new project, new needle. That's
– okay.
That's where I am.
Yeah. Yep. Some days I think that the needle preference is psychological more than anything.
It might be, but again, I sort of want to do like a good experimental test, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, so like the other one I really want to test out, I keep telling myself I need to do this, is the, Anker Floss. Black Anker Floss has better coverage than DMC Anker Floss.
Yes, I've heard that. Yes.
Heard that. Have you ever tested it?
No.
Okay. No.
And I think I actually have Black Anker Floss, but I never have. Yeah.
I bought a skein of Black Anker Floss when I saw it, because I was like, I need to test that out. Not that I have any, you know, big project planned where I need to, you know, use black and I need to make a, you know, decision which kind. I just really want to test it out for myself, you know, stitch a,
sure,
fix something or another. I just need to do it. But, and just to find out, because sometimes you hear, I guess, you know, sometimes on Floss Tube or, you know, wherever, you hear people talk about something, whether it be the Anker Floss versus DMC Floss or whatever. And then I feel like you hear it repeated so much, you just sort of wonder, well, has anyone actually, like, really? I mean, I do believe some people have stitched with both, but have they ever stitched the exact same pattern with both or the exact same motif with both and can truly say that one is better than the other? Like,
yeah.
I need to do that experiment and report my results. So I'll put that on the to-do list.
Yeah, but no, that happens a lot. And I asked that same question. Yeah. Has anybody actually sat down and done that? Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. Same thread, same time, same pattern on the same ground cloth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, right next to each other so you can tell.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And sometimes I think that is, like, Bowen needles are my favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Until Mary Corbett locked me in on the tulip needles.
Okay.
Which I really like those. But I mean, those are pricey, so I don't have a large collection of those. Where Bowen needles, you know, yep. Bowen needles you can pick up for, I don't know, $5 or $6 a pack. And so I have a collection of those. But the tulip ones, yeah. But I like them. But I think if I was truly objective and stood back, I would probably end up in your camp where it gets the thread through the cloth. Who cares?
Yeah.
Because I haven't run into one yet that wears out. Mm-hmm. Other than I have had that same experience that you have, where you put a new needle and you go and you realize you've been dragging sandpaper through the cloth for, you know, for how many hours.
And yes. Although I also have sitting on my with my needlework on my stand, my typical stitching spot. I have. I don't even know if they do this anymore. You know, when you, the traditional looking pin cushion, the tomato pin cushion.
Yeah, with the strawberry resin holder. Yeah.
Strawberry on top.
Yep.
So a long time ago, I'd gotten one of those, cut off the strawberry on top, sewed that little strawberry to a, like a piece of ribbon. And cause that's a, what do you call it? You know, to run your needles through to,
right.
Okay. So every so often when I'm using a needle and it feels, to use your words, like a little bit of sandpaper, I run it through the strawberry and I can feel the difference. I mean, it takes an awful lot for me to say, maybe I need to use a new needle, but I run it through the strawberry and I'm like, yeah, there, that's better now. And I keep going away. You know what I mean? So I might recommend keeping one of those, nearby just to kind of
yeah
clear off the extra stuff that builds up, whatever it is, you know, whatever you call that.
It's some kind of resin, isn't it? I'm not sure what, there is a specific thing that gets put in there. I know. Yeah.
It's just like, I mean, it's sort of like the, it's not sandpaper, but it's sort of like it smooths out your needle. It smooths right. out.
Gives and a little polish. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Puts a little polish to it, so to speak.
And
yeah.
I love when we talk about these things and you know that out there listening are about, oh, I don't know, 200 people who are just going, you idiots, it's this. You know, who doesn't
yes.
know that?
Yes, absolutely. And there's also a bunch of people, I will make you a bet, that are like, oh, that's what the strawberry is for.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
Okay? Yep. Because I certainly had pin cushions for a long time before somebody told me what the strawberry was for. Mm-hmm. All right. I just thought it was a little decorative, like, silly touch, and I didn't realize it had a purpose. So I'm just, you know, we all learn things at different rates and at different times. So,
yep. And to all you people who think we're idiots, stick around. We'll do something even dumber. So, you know, and to all you people who just discovered this thing, you're welcome.
There you go. Absolutely.
Glad to help.
Yep.
Yep. So, okay. Now you make me want to get one of those strawberries and just see.
Yep. Just no. And just keep it nearby. And, every so often, and like not on a regular basis, I only do it when I feel like there's something slowing down the needle,
yeah.
for lack of better words. But I do, it's just, it's like, it's on the ribbon that's attached to, it's a very long ribbon that's attached to the scissors. And anyway, it just stays right near my stitchy spot. So it's right, it's just always there. Yeah.
Yeah. I love these little, I love talking about these little things that, you know, mm-hmm. that are part of the hobby. I think they're interesting.
Absolutely.
You know, in the big picture, I'm not sure they make a huge difference, but I think it's interesting.
Absolutely.
And those strawberries have been around forever. So
yes.
it's not like they were a dumb idea.
Nope.
You know, they obviously do some good or they wouldn't be around. So, yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I would give it a try. Load up a bunch of needles for your gossamer lace thing. Just give it a try. See if it makes any difference. I'd be curious to hear what your reaction is.
Well, okay. But see, here's the other thing though, is that,
you're not going to do it, but I'm just, you know.
Well, no, but let me tell you why I'm not going to do it. How do you end your threads on Sarah Brazier? Like when you're done stitching a particular color or something, are you turning over your frame and burying your thread?
Most of the time, yeah. I usually start with a pin stitch and usually end by burying it or a Bargello tuck or something, yes.
Okay. And so that thread, that needle that you've just finished with,
mm-hmm.
how often does it still have thread on it that you're going to use?
Well, with samplers, quite often.
Okay, so yeah, I'm talking about the project you're working on right now.
Exactly. Oh, quite often, yeah.
Okay. See, but with the project I'm working on right now, I'm using every thread till
right.
it's done because it's all one color.
Right.
And also, I'm not even turning over my scroll frame. I am, you know, I, you know, till I get, you know, an inch and a half, whatever it is that is, or the thread is starting to wear away. And then I go a little distance away to a, that I know is going to get covered with stitches. And I just come to the front of the project and I come up with my needle. And then like the concept of an away knot sort of thing, sure. But I never go on the other side to, you know, bury it. It just gets covered with, and I do that for both starting and ending. So I'm never having to turn over the frame. So what this is to say is that, so there I am, I'm ending a thread. I'm pulling up and in the process, pulling the needle out of the thread. I have the needle in my fingers. The next thing I do is I reach for, you know, the next strand of floss. Like, I don't, like, there doesn't seem to be any time saving involved in terms of,
like, no, needing. But see, and I think you're a prime candidate for this technique. Uh-huh. Prime candidate, because you would pull the needle out of the thread, or pull the, off the thread, flip it on your needle minder, reach over, grab another loaded needle, and off you go.
Okay.
See, I think you would find that your stitching your stitching is not as interrupted.
Mm-hmm. All right. I will keep it in mind. Absolutely.
You won't do it.
No, for you, Gary, I'll give it a try. I will.
No, that's the prime candidate right there. Because, okay. See, the only ones that I do this for are the two colors that are used a lot.
Okay.
So the other ones, I put them in that Paco holder because it'll be a portion of a thread, and then I'll come back a little bit later and need it for something else. Mm-hmm. But these two colors, when I stitch with those, invariably, I'll use the entire thread. Mm-hmm. So, when I was thinking about this last night, and knew we were going to be talking, I thought your gossamer lace thing is a classic. Actually, any black work type thing would be an ideal thing for this. Mm. I don't know. I'd be curious.
Okay.
And of course, the trouble is that you have hours and hours and years of one habit.
Of doing, exactly, yes. Yeah. It's possible to change habits. All right.
We'll look to hear from you. Mm-hmm.
All right.
You bought a book.
I bought a book. Yes.
Not at a library dumping sale. Arlene paid for a book.
Well, no, the bigger picture was that I had a gift card, and I was told by the person who gave me the gift card was, do not spend this on, boring needed stuff. Save it for a treat for yourself, which was very kind instructions to be given. And so that's what I was fulfilling the instructions of the friend who gave me the gift card.
Okay.
So I've kept that in mind. It's not like I needed to go out that very day and buy something, but, it is true that when I am often sharing about books, on FlossTube, on Instagram, and how Gary knows about this is because I wrote a blog post about it. I am often sharing about treasures because they are treasures when you find them at used book sales. But this is a book that I purchased that is a new book. It's 2018, copyright 2018. And it is called Embroidered Treasures Flowers, Exquisite Needlework of the Embroiderers Guild Collection by Dr. Annette Collinge, Collinge. And the Embroiderers Guild that this refers to is in the UK. It is not Embroiderers Guild of America. It is the Embroiderers Guild in the UK. And what I loved about this book is that, well, first of all, it is not a project book. It is not, here's some beautiful flowers, here's how to stitch them. It is pieces from the Embroiderers Guild collection that range from, I meant to see this, what was the earliest dates that I saw listed in here? probably 17th century. They don't have dates so much. Oh, no, here's one that says late 16th century. So that, you know, they all are dated, things like that, basically what century they're from. Ranging up until the 20th century. I don't think they have anything listed as completely modern, 21st century. But what grabbed me was the variety of needlework types that were in this book. There are plenty of books out there that are historical samplers. There are plenty of books out there that are black work. They're pick a type. This had such variety of types of needlework, beautiful photography in it. Every page had basically one item where there's one picture that shows a picture of the item and then one close up. And there were so many of them that I wished had more pictures of it. And so many techniques that either I was only vaguely aware of, or in some cases I've never heard of that before, or just some unique takes on things that I have seen, like timbre, I think I'm saying that correctly, where you do it with a timbre embroidery, where you're doing it with like a hook with a particular tool. And I've seen, actually, I think Mary Corbett is the first place I saw that.
Yep. She has three or four posts where she takes through a timbre embroidery project. Yeah, it's fascinating.
And it's fascinating and all of that. But then to see the timbre embroidery that was in this book was just like a whole new take on it. And the fact that the one that was in here is from the mid 18th century, you know, just to learn that, okay, this has been around for a while. There were some, you know, there's some things that I just never heard of before that have been around. And then there's some unusual things in here, as I had shared. There is one of the chapters is called embroidery. Wait, let me make sure I'm going to say it correctly. Embroidery with unusual materials. And among the unusual materials that I featured was something called fish scale embroidery. Now, I wish they talked about like how many examples exist of these kinds of things, because you know, for all we know, this is like the only one.
Right.
And I'm looking at this picture. I'm like, so there's these flowers, and the white part of the flowers, they say, are fish scales. They were soaked in water to remove the fishy odor. Two holes were made at the base of each scale with a fine needle. The scales could then be stitched in place with a fine thread. Perch, carp, and goldfish scales were used. Female fish usually have the largest scales. This is from the 19th century in Great Britain. And like, I mean, it's fascinating. It also makes you wonder why. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Fascinating. Okay.
That piece there, that made me stop. Because when I got to that picture in your posting, it's like, how did they stitch that? Because it really is a form of stump work. And then when I read fish scales, no way. Because they're incredibly delicate and beautiful, and they make great flower petals. It's really beautiful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then, like, on the facing page to that, I see what, you know, a person looking at the picture, and at first glance, it looked like some form of, you know, metal thread embroidery or metallic thread embroidery. But then you look at the top of the page, it says straw embroidery. From 19th century Eastern Europe. This is a very rare technique, not done today, because of the patience needed to make both sides of the embroidery appear the same. It is possible that this collar, embroidered with straw on black net with a scalloped edge, came from Russia, but sadly we have little information about it. To use the straw for embroidery, each piece was cut along its length to make six narrow strips, which were sewn into a net background to make flowers and leaves. It's just, it's amazing. Like,
and it looks like gold.
It looks like gold.
Yep.
And I can only imagine how fragile it is, especially that it's, you know, 100, 200 years old. And the next paragraph does go on to say, Victorian ladies in Great Britain liked a challenge and may well have used this technique, although they could also buy little images stamped onto straw, which they would glue to fabric. The shimmer of the gold straw against the black mat of the net makes this an eye-catching piece of work. So I guess they're referring, like, this particular piece on this page is from Eastern Europe, 19th century, but they were talking about that the Victorian ladies in Great Britain were trying to emulate it in some way. But it, you know, it just makes you want to learn more, like how many pieces exist of that. There is a piece, you didn't see a picture of this on my post, of embroidery on tree bark. And it is, I mean, to get the holes, I mean, it's like, you know, they had to have, like, I don't know how to say, I would have to guess they had to have like pre-pricked the holes. I don't know how else to say it, to get to then get thread through some holes. This dear little box is embroidered on birch tree bark, and the thread is actually dyed moose hair.
Well, I could see that working, because birch bark is, you know, fairly paper thin, mm-hmm. like heavy paper, and moose hair has got to be incredibly coarse. Mm-hmm. So I could see that working. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's, I'd be curious to see that picture, because that's got to be beautiful. Is it white? I assume it's white birch bark.
No, it is not. It is a sort of a tannish color. I mean, it could be age or.
Yeah.
There's no reference to anything about the colors. It says they have three pieces in the collection on tree bark, and all three pieces were donated by Queen Mary. Oh, the maker. You know, the maker was nuns at the Ursuline Convent in Quebec, Canada, and it was a gift of Queen Mary. Huh. Yeah.
Well, in Canada, you know, birch trees are quite common. So, yep. There's my paper. Because as I recall, the history of birch bark is it was used as paper too to write on. Long ago, and so yeah, I could see that happening. Yep.
There is, so I think one of the pictures I posted, they just call it French knot flowers, hand embroidery, and it's all made of French knots. And I mean, I loved the layout, the design, but it also reminded me there is a, and I showed this in a floss tube once, what is her name? There is someone who does a lot of these little knot designs, you know, designs that are made to just be made completely of French knots. But clearly the woman who does it nowadays is she still puts out designs, and I'm like looking at my little piece that I made of hers, and I'm blanking on her name. And at the same time, she didn't invent the technique. It's been around for a long time. People have done French knot embroidery for a long time. Berlin work, Pekin knots, P-E-K-I-N. Anyway, so many amazing things in here, which it's such a beautiful book and so much to learn from it. You know, that's, you know, if I'm going to spend money on a book, I want to like be appreciating the beauty that's in it, and I want to learn something from it. Yep. And that's definitely, if you are someone who likes the variety of needlework that exists out there and history. Cause there's definitely, this is all like it's all old stuff. It's historical. This is a great book for that, to appeal to the person who enjoys the variety, just to see, you know, all kinds of ways that thread has been used going through fabric throughout history. It's just wonderful.
Yeah. And last week, Christine and I were talking about, books, and she mentioned about times when, you know, we were talking about needlework relieving stress and giving you an escape at times when you're just really wound up. And she talked about times when you can't stitch, mm-hmm. but a way to get the same effect is to pull out a needlework book,
yep.
and just immerse yourself in it. And this book would be perfect for that.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And I mean, also it certainly had the appeal for me. So the theme is all flowers. So the author, Dr. Annette Collinge, you know, clearly went to the collections at the Embroiderers Guild and was looking at only pieces that had flowers. And so if you're someone who enjoys flowers, you know, that just sort of adds to the appeal. I also, the very last piece in the book, which is an embroidered fire screen, it does say, among the riot of colorful flowers is an equally colorful bird, not recognizable as a British bird, but a hint as to what will be found in the next book in this series, Embroidered Treasures, Birds. And I did go online, and sure enough, that actually the Birds book is already out. They're both published in 2018, and the Birds book is already out. And I don't know if I'm going to get that one. I'm more of a flower person than a birds person, but I like the idea. You know, picking a theme, going into a vast collection, and seeing what you can come up with from that theme is just wonderful. I love it.
Yeah. As a designer, when you go through that book, does your mind start noting things that might be incorporated into a design?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Like there are two chapters that I don't know what went through the author's mind, but in my mind, no, because she called one of them Symmetry in Stitches, and that this is at the second to last chapter, and then the last chapter she calls Irregular Designs. And in my mind, it's sort of like potpourri. They didn't fit in any other category, so she just like, well, here's a bunch of things I really want to include in the book, and look, a whole bunch of these are symmetrical, and a whole bunch of these are not symmetrical. That's how I'm going to get them into the book, okay? Sorry, that was my interpretation.
Hey, it's her book, you know?
She can do what she wants, but there are, like I'm looking at one thing right here. It's just called so it's in the symmetrical design section. It's called handkerchief sachet, and it's just a piece of embroidery. It's got some flowers on it, but the geometric layout of it is so visually appealing to me. And again, it's in the symmetry chapter. I could, you know, I'm inspired by that symmetrical layout. And then there was definitely a piece in that irregular design, which again is just because they're not symmetrical, that I was looking at from sort of the opposite perspective. That is a beautiful layout. Here it is. It's just a grouping of flowers. And for this one, it's because of the color, the particular color, combinations just appeal to my eye. And it's sort of like next time I'm working on a design that I'm looking for, because a lot of my designs, not a lot, whatever percentage I might say, some of my designs I try not to even suggest colors because they're like more monochrome or could be whatever you want. Others are, I am giving in suggestions of colors. And when I do, I also want to turn to a picture or a something that appeals to me and then find the DMC colors that matches to those color, to that particular color scheme. Mm-hmm. And like I'm looking at one particular flower bouquet right here. I'm not talking about, you know, reproducing this flower bouquet. I'm talking about, I like the colors in this flower bouquet. I got to remember this because this is a great combination of colors that I might need to return to at some future point. So yes, a book like this has multiple layers of places that could be of use and desire and inspiration for me. So that's truly what I'm looking for in a lot of my book searching these days is books of things that have inspiration of all different kinds. And this book definitely has that on multiple levels.
Yeah. Yeah. That, noting color combinations, that's going to be one of my long-term frustrations is there was in Downton Abbey, I don't even remember what season. It was one of the last two. One of the women had a color combination on that just struck me. Mm-hmm. And it was all, you know, I can think of three different designs I would stitch in that combination. And then I didn't write down what show it was. And, you know, now I have to go back and watch them all, which is probably not what I'm going to do, but yeah, whatever. No, I know what you mean. Yeah. Okay. We're going to run out of time.
Yeah.
See folks, the trouble with Arlene is before we started recording this, we talked for almost an hour ahead of time. So we would have recorded that, but some of it we couldn't record. So, but anyway, so we've been at this for Oh my, 2 hours plus. that's fun. The gossamer lace thing.
Yes.
Now you're got to be in the final stretch for that thing, right? Finishing it.
Yeah. Well, yes, and what do you not? Depends what you define as final stretch, and
like the last quarter of it.
Not quite. And unfortunately, I'm in this, I am going to say unfortunately, I want to be working on it right now, but I have just in the last few days had to like discipline myself, for all good reason. I shared in my last FlossTube video that I had some designs accepted to Just Cross Stitch magazine, which is great and wonderful. And I am stitching the models for them. And the truth is they have deadlines. And I was trying for a few days to stitch, you know, two lengths of thread in that, and then I could work into this. Okay, no, tonight I'm going to do four lengths of thread, and then, you know, like a play like that kind of thing.
Right.
I came to the conclusion I need to stop that, and I need to devote, you know, whatever amount of stitching time I have. I got deadlines, and so because of that, I actually have not worked on this for about a week now, and I just have to accept that, you know, priorities here. So where I am with it is not quite completely at the three quarters mark. So I still have like one more like layer, not layer, like the outer border still needs to go, and then I'll be, well, and it's more than, it's more than three quarters because the center part area is done. But yes, if I could, I'd be pushing through and I would be totally working on it. But like I said, it's on break because it has to be right now. But were you going to ask a more specific question about it?
I did have a question, yes. Yes, I did. Okay, so I was curious because I've been watching this go on. It's a gorgeous piece, you know, not to suck up to you or anything, but it's just a gorgeous piece, and it's really coming out very nicely. And but I've wondered from a designer perspective, as you've worked your way through this thing, because it's quite large.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And what has gone through your mind in terms of the design? Have you had thoughts that it's just too big, that it's too detailed or not detailed enough? What goes through your mind when you're stitching your own design in terms of this is spot on, you know, I nailed this one, or if I had it to do over again, I'd do something else? What kind of things go through your mind when you do that?
That's a really good question. And the answer for that is actually different from one design to another, because my answer for this piece is different than something else. So my answer for this piece is that, like, because I designed this piece as a reproduction of a filet lace tablecloth that I have, I am looking forward to the day that I can have the finished needlework and I can lay out the tablecloth and say, look, it's a miniaturized version of that, so to speak. That the detail level is, you know, it's not quite the same. I mean, what can I say? They're two different mediums, so they're not going to quite line up exactly. And the detail that you can do in filet lace, which you do with a needle, it's not bobbin lace. But there were some details in that piece that I just can't reproduce when you're doing it with, like a blackwork technique. To me, it's all working out exactly perfectly as I envisioned it would, you know, like, and in terms of the size, well, as I was charting it, as I was working on it, and, you know, I started from the center and worked outward, I knew that this is the size it's just going to be. That said, it's also because of the way you build out, there's like circular layers to it. It's also the kind of design, and I've said this on FlossTube's videos, that someone could work on, you know, the first couple of, for lack of a better word, circles and say, hey, I'm done. And it looks like a done piece. And that's like an appealing thing when you can take a design and, you know, you can make it your own by saying, I'm not doing that 18 inch wide thing. I'm going to only do the, you know, 9 inch wide version of it. I have on my website, on the website, there's a gallery tab, and in that gallery are pictures of pieces that of my designs that of people have sent in their own versions of them, particularly when they've done their own color schemes, whatever. Somebody has sent in a blackwork version of this. They have only done, I don't know how to, you know, the first few circles. And for them, they're done. They're great. And it looks beautiful. And that's what I loved, you know, is that she did it her way. She did it in a variegated thread, which is wonderful. So you get a really cool use of color there. So, there are moments where I'm like, yeah, this is a big piece and it's taking a long time. But in my needlework history, I do big pieces. So I don't, you know, that's just part of the nature of it for me. All that said, there are other pieces that I have designed, that I have worked on, that I have changed or wanted to fix or make adjustments or whatever. It all depends. Like some things I have, like the canvas work designs that I've done, I have stitched before I came out with a pattern. So there were lots of changes before I came out with a pattern. There was original visions that didn't work out. The canvas work design that I have started and I, you know, have just kept kind of putting aside because it just hasn't been working out great right now. I totally have the vision for it. I just need to like make it happen better. You know what I mean? And so that is a case where it will happen. I know it will. I just, you know, all those things that you were saying that, but that one isn't going to become a published pattern until there's actually a stitched piece to go with it. There are cross-stitch designs that I've done that I've put out the pattern. I have not stitched a model for it. I've had other people work on them. They give me feedback, which I always appreciate, and have given me some great suggestions. And you know, when I can, I've fixed and come out with like a reissue of the pattern. If it's something significant and worth stating. And I think there's times where it's great to kind of keep that open flexibility when you can as a designer. And then to me, I think what's the most important piece is that every stitcher really should make a piece their own. And they really should, you know, put their own spin on it and choose their own colors or do only this part or add in a border or do whatever it is that makes it for them. And sometimes when I'm stitching my own piece, it's almost like I'm even going to stitch it different the way I charted it because this is how I'm feeling about it right now. In 3 months, I felt differently about it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So sometimes there's that element too. So the summary of all of that is that the answers to your question is different depending on the piece, but the gossamer lace piece is nope. I'm all happy with how I plotted it out, charted it out originally. It's all good. And I'm continuing with it as is. Yep. Absolutely.
Okay. I just curious, you know, I just, cause it's art, you know, at some point it's all art and it's fluid. And so, you know, I wonder sometimes if you're stitching and it sounds like it has happened where you get partway down the road and you make a left instead of a right. And,
absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, that really can depend on what kind of piece it is, where I'm going with it, what I'm thinking about when I'm doing it and really when I'm stitching it versus when I'm coming out with the pattern of it. Some of that effect sometimes that's totally the effect also. So,
Just intrigues me. That's all. All right. We got to end it here, Arlene.
All right. It's always great to talk to you, Gary.
Fun on this end too. Thanks for making the time for us. And thanks to everyone for listening. And we'll be back on whatever the next day is. We'll be back. Yes.
Okay. Take care.